A shining soul that makes me smiley. It's none other than Mr. Miles O'Reilly, a man who has given so much of his time to capturing other artists in their prime. But on this occasion, we focus on him and the beautiful outcome of his own creative whim. With his hand on his heart, Miles sings from the deep. And Miles, oh my, how this song makes me weep. Call me a creep, call me a fool, I'd still dive headfirst into the Miles O'Reilly pool. So shall we?
What is a song?
Where do songs come from? What is the life of a song?
How much can a song morph and change before it becomes something else entirely?
Please welcome Mr. Miles O'Reilly, everyone. Miles is just going to get plugged in here with his microphone. So yes, this show exists in order to focus on one song and to provide any additional context around that song, to find that one song's place in the world. Because each song will have its own unique place. And Miles has a new song of his that is very special to me, and I hope, I'm sure special to some others and possibly to some of you as well. So we're going to get into that song. It's called Shine. But first, we'll give a little background as to how Miles and I came to be sat here together. Miles, do you remember the first time that we met?
I remember the first time that we met. I don't know if it's the same time that you remember when we met.
What are you thinking of?
You walked into a bar in Cork, actually. I think it was about 5 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was like, that's fucking Peter Broderick.
Right. Well, that's not the time I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the time that you came out to our house at the gable door.
So, yes, that's right.
Was that the first time we met?
That was actually the first time.
Okay, right. So, yeah. This was 2015 or 16, right?
It was 2016.
Or maybe even 17?
Maybe even 17.
You were working with a man called Donald Deneen, mm-hmm, on a video project called This Ain't No Disco. Mm-hmm. And you guys were, you came out to our house in the countryside out near Headford here, mm-hmm, not too far, about 20 minutes drive from here. Mm-hmm. And you came out there with Donald and you were filming myself and a couple others out there doing some music as part of a series you were working on.
That's right. I was hiding behind the camera.
Yes.
Which is why I don't say it's the first time we really met, because I don't think we said two words to each other.
We didn't say much at all.
I was witnessing you, like 2 feet away from you, through my little screen of my camera.
That's it.
Which became a glorious piece of film. I think one of the few moments of the This Ain't No Disco series that I was making with Donal, mm-hmm, that I really thought had the most beautiful reactions from people who watched.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that setting where we lived out there was really beautiful. It's out by the Loch Corrib for those who are local and know where that is. Mm. An old like thatch cottage out by the lake, and we even did a song a cappella out there.
It was unbelievable.
That was my introduction to you, having just moved to Ireland. Mm-hmm. I meet you as a cameraman for this series. And little did I know that you had a whole musical history. And then you would go on working primarily as a cameraman in the music world for a while. But then eventually, this year, you've come out with an album of your own, delving into the music once again. And so, yeah, well, first of all, I wanted to say, when you came to visit that time in 2017, did you happen to bring a microphone stand of yours? This is a long time ago, I know. But did you have a microphone stand that was really beat up and maybe some bits of tape on it?
Yes.
Right, so after you guys left, I noticed that was there, but I somehow, rather than telling you guys, I just adopted it and have used it for the last 5 years. So I thought maybe I could take this occasion to give you back your microphone stand. Let me just see if you recognize this. It's very beaten, and for years, I don't know why I didn't just bother to go buy a microphone stand, but I just adopted this guy here, and... just want to see if you recognize this. Now, I did put some different pieces of tape on it, but does this belong to you?
That's two, one. Oh my God. Thank you for giving it back. Yes.
I mean, it's the worst microphone stand I've ever seen.
Which is why I might have left it. Or didn't miss it. Oh, I'm so glad to have you back. Thank you.
Okay.
Do you know what? That it's come full circle back to me. I must keep it.
You must,
And it must be the most treasured mic stand now.
Right.
You know, it's gone from being the least treasured to the most treasured.
There we go.
And you must sign it for me as well.
One man's trash is that same man's treasure.
It's a really annoying one. So, no, it's not annoying anymore. I love it.
Great. Yeah, okay, wow. Well, we got that out of the way. So there's so much to talk about with this album. But I'm wondering, should we maybe just have a listen to the song first, and then we can sort of just take a dive into all the questions and conversation?
I'd love people to hear the song.
Great. Got the CD here. I don't know, Jono, we've got Jono behind the camera here. Maybe, Jono, you could get a quick shot of that there. Where is this album cover taken, actually?
It's taken on Inishbofin.
Inishbofin
Island.
That's where Patter's from. That's where these guys of the Black Gate are from.
It's got a particularly cool scar that goes down the middle of this rock face, which is similar to the scar that's happening here.
You pointed that out right here. That's so cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Patter, do you know where this is by any chance? It's a bit... it's a bit far, but... I also want to point out that when you take the CD out of this, it's got one of the nicest CD tray inlays. There's a little kitty cat curled up right inside there. It's beautiful. Jono, can you see that?
That's Seamus,
okay. Is Seamus on one of the tracks on this album?
Yes.
Because there is a cat.
So you can hear
I was Seamus. Listening to it the other day, and I went looking at the windows to see if I could find my cats because I thought they were trying to come in. Okay. So here's Shine by Miles O'Reilly.
My mother only wanted me.
that I would shine. Shine, 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 shine. Didn't grow it. There was pressure in my life to ignore it. I was told there wasn't money in crying to a song.
That's the song that we're here to talk about. And there's, for such a simple sounding song, there's so much, I know from talking to you a little bit, that there's so much behind it and around it. And I felt it even before starting to talk to you about it. but maybe before giving you the floor to sort of give us that context, could I tell you a bit more about just when I first heard that song, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I met you, like I said, as a cameraman.
Mm.
And for people who lived here in Ireland, might have known you before that, Maybe this wouldn't be such a surprise to hear you sing, but I met you in several instances in which you were the cameraman. First, that time we talked about already, and even last year, you and I were at Body and Soul Festival here in Ireland, where there wasn't a public, but they had artists come and people come to film those yes. artists. And you were the person that got assigned to film my thing there.
That's right.
So then again, I'm in this role with you as the cameraman. And actually, just a little tangent about that. I don't know if you remember, but I set up a tent out there and we ended up camping out together. We really had only met a few times. Of course, it feels like we know each other better than we do because we have mutual friends. But I always wanted to know if you remembered this, because there was a moment there that happened. You do. You're nodding already. We had finished our work for the day. We went and sat around a fire with everybody else, but we ended up back in the tent.
Well, this crazy person appeared at the fire.
Someone appeared at the fire that made us a bit uncomfortable. I left.
You left.
Went back to the tent. You eventually caught on and came back to the tent.
Yes.
And then we had a guitar. I had a harmonica with me, because every once in a while I think, gosh, wouldn't it be cool to play the harmonica? Because it's so small, you can bring it everywhere. You know, when you see someone on the side of the street playing harmonica and they're just really shredding on it.
We had the best session in the tent at 3 in the morning till 6 in the morning.
You were playing the guitar
yeah.
and I was playing the harmonica, and I can't play the harmonica. But I expressed the depths of my soul through that harmonica that night.
And we had a little bit of whiskey, and you had a little bit of a session ready in a bag there. And we,
yeah.
It was a beautiful night. But do you remember waking up like in minus 10, like frozen solid?
Yeah.
I think you had to get up and run around. I had to put on loads more clothes. And
yeah.
It was still freezing.
Right.
Oh, God, we were wrecked the next day.
We were.
And then we had to film our song.
Oh, it was then we had to film the song. That's right. That's why the version we captured isn't very good. But we never spoke about that moment afterwards. But we had this session in the tent that was like spiritual.
Spiritually, really good. We exchanged a lot of information about the stuff we love.
And I think
we love a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah, and we had spoken that day about our mutual love of ambient music, and we discovered that we both like. There's a few very obscure makers of ambient music that we both really like, and so that was another way for us to bond. And so then here's Miles the cameraman. Oh, Miles loves ambient music, and I knew that I had seen some things online. I think you had started putting out some ambient musings that you were working on.
I guess so.
Had
like,
you?
Yeah, just like stuff, sketches. I wasn't taking it seriously.
Sure. Okay.
I think that part of my life, actually meeting you as a professional, Peter, who has your foot a little bit in that world, and meeting you and hanging out with you kind of broke a wall for me a little bit in a way, and gave me a little bit of confidence after I had met you that time.
Interesting.
You know, just in my musicality and in the language in the tent with the whiskey and the smoking. But the language we were talking, I felt, you know, I'm not talking about cinematography. I'm not talking about editing. I'm not talking about. I'm talking about music with a musician, and it felt it gave me this kind of vigor.
Right.
And it was just one of the many things that made me move away from filming into music.
Yeah.
So thanks for that.
So that was kind of one of the last times I saw you. And then I was in Clare earlier this year. I told you about this earlier today. I was there doing a bit of a residency, working on some music. And at the end of my trip there, I met up with our mutual friend, Simon O'Reilly. And he was like, he said to me, Miles is almost finished with his vocal album. And I had seen a few bits online that you were starting to sing. And I was very intrigued. But he's like, Miles sent me over a new song today, and he wants me to play pedal steel on it. And it was that song, Shine. So he played that for me that night. That was back in April of this year, 2022. And I was immediately floored by the song. Like, I had this I had this, I felt a potent sense of, there was just something very, how do I describe it? Not heavy, but big. It felt like something big was coming out in the song to me. And especially because having known you from the guy behind the camera, then to the guy making ambient music, and then having heard some of your first songs with singing, and also like on this album, Cocooning Heart, most of the songs, the vocals are quite hushed. They're quite they're hushed. They're they're a whisper kind of tone almost. But in this song, Shine, it's like it goes from a cocooning heart to like a butterflying heart. You know, it's it sounds like all of a sudden you're like you're just out there in the open, expressing very plainly a pure sort of essence, and I was really struck by it. So that's my story with this song, and I'd love for you to just give us any and all context of where how this came about.
Well, it's funny. I had stopped playing music because there was a sequence of events when I was playing a lot of music in my 20s, a sequence of events that made me stop wanting to be in the spotlight and what made me stop wanting to use my voice.
But how to back up a little bit, if you don't mind, how did you first get into music?
I saw an ad, a band wanted a singer. And I knew I was capable, and my mother thought I was a brilliant singer. She couldn't stop telling it to all my siblings.
She wanted you to shine.
And my siblings hated the fact that my mother, I answered this ad to be in a band, and that band had a kind of a head, there was a head to the band who was very good at administration, and he knew all about the industry, and we did quite well, and we signed a publishing deal the same week as Amy Winehouse with the same label. And the same A&R. And then it was 2 years later, we signed to Virgin, V2 Virgin, and we released two albums. They were quite under the radar here because it was a London label, but right. We were drowned in London. Nobody knew us there either. So, right. You know, there was this kind of thing where we were doing a lot of work, but we're getting no rewards and no audiences really from any of it. And the band dropped away. I was 29, 30, 31 when I decided I was on my own, and the label really just liked my voice, and they were just trying to get me to write songs and trying to get me to be, facilitating me with money. And it was like I was on the dole, basically. But
For people outside of Ireland who won't know what the dole is, that's like, you know, social welfare.
Social welfare. It felt like that to me because there was no real rewards coming back from it. And essentially that's why there was no deal anymore at the end of the day. I owed so much to the label. I wasn't making
enough. Oh, wow. It's one of those horror big label stories that you hear about.
Big horror label story.
Wow.
Yeah, textbook, you know. They say... they say 90% of all bands that get signed don't make a second album. And
right,
90% right. of bands that make a second album don't have a hit, don't make a third. You know,
wow.
It's like this, we were in that majority of bands that just didn't do well. And then in the end, it was just me and my own. And I have other talents. Like I love photography and I love filmmaking. And when I turned to those at a time when music was just falling apart, and when I turned to filmmaking, everything seemed to blossom and my life just seemed to blossom.
Right.
And I just filmed what I knew, which was music.
Mm-hmm.
And I had friends in music, like I had good friends doing well in music, like Glenn Hansard and Lisa Hannigan, and I filmed them. I made videos for them.
Yeah.
And Ronan O'Snodig, and I just had my camera. I was like, do you mind if I'm around backstage? Do you mind if I just make some stuff and put it on YouTube, which was new at the time?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, they were like delighted with that. You
right.
know? It's like and it did well for them, so they started paying me to come around. And next thing I knew is for 14 years I had been filming musicians,
wow.
just me filming, editing, Choosing the songs, which is a unique thing.
Sure.
Because they're friends more than clients.
Sure.
And I've had a lot of freedom in that world to express myself and but essentially learn as well. Learn from musicians that have done it right or things have been going right for them.
Sure. So you're coming out of this sort of failed music industry experience.
Radful experience.
Sitting behind a camera, taking note of how people are doing things a little bit.
How they're doing it right.
Wow.
You know, yeah. Glenn Hansard doing it right. Lee Zanigan doing it right. Conor O'Brien doing it right.
Right.
And so I made videos for them and I hung out with them and I'm just learning. And it, like, there was no part of me thinking, I'm learning this so maybe I can enable myself to do music better. It wasn't like that. It was just, I was committed to being a filmmaker and I am still committed to being a filmmaker and I still do those things for my friends. But just from watching so much and from listening so much, I was kind of eventually tutored back from the knowledge that I was gleaning from my footage and from the works. I was tutored back into a feeling of confidence, which in that album, specifically that one, when I decided to sing again.
Cocooning Heart,
which was only, I decided to sing again in March.
In March, so recent.
Yeah, it was just March.
It's this year.
Yeah.
Wow.
And when I decided to do that, that's when I decided also at the same time, it's not just messing around, I decided I was going to commit to trying again and putting myself out there again.
Yeah.
As much as any of my peers and the people I've been watching.
Yeah.
And just see how it goes. Because I had this renewed sense of confidence from watching and listening and learning. But it starts off with whispers. The album does. It's all whispery. Yeah. And I know Shine is track 3, but it should be the last one because it was the last one that I've written.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I haven't written another one since, but it is the most vivacious. I'm back. I'm shining.
Right.
And the whole intention, I guess, of the lyric is, you know, I want to shine because other people want me to shine and they get to shine when they hear me shining and we all shine together as a self-perpetuating, shining, glowing ball of love, which I've experienced. I've played that live a few times and it's a beautiful thing to see what it does to a room and to an audience, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone gets a chance, I think, after the pandemic to sing the chorus of that song is quite nice.
It's so sing-alongable. Yeah. Like, it's so catchy, you know, and... You know, it was so interesting for me to hear it because we had sort of bonded over really abstract, obscure music, you know. So to then hear you come out with this like sing-along song,
I have to say, we did. We were talking about. I was citing my favorite ambient artists.
Yeah,
as in they're the ones I listen to all the time. But every time I said a new ambient artist that I love, Peter would be like, oh yeah, I know him. Oh yeah, I know her. Oh yeah, no, we found out. Oh no, I made an album with her. And I was just like, holy shit, you're living among them. You know?
I guess I've met a lot of musicians over the years.
Fair play to you, Peter.
You're right.
That also it made it more realistic to me that I could be among people like that. You know?
Sure, like, you know, sure. Yeah, it's not just... the fantasy world. It's not fantasy. It's the real world.
It's a bit of reality. So thank you for reminding me that that can be a reality if you really want that, you know?
My pleasure. Here we are talking about a song that I love and has actually made me well up many times. There's just something, a simple beauty to it that just cuts straight to my heart.
Thank you. I remember I had written the verse in my kitchen.
It
kind of just kind of fell out as consonants and phonetically there weren't any really words. It was just playing it on my little keyboard. But as soon as I hit on Shine, shine. I was just crying. I was I was crying for like half an hour until I actually had the restraint to go record that now. And I immediately recorded what you hear there. There's no second takes.
Ah, that's it. Is that it? Now, this is the perfect moment, I think, to maybe share. Because I asked you when we were preparing for this, do you have any demos or anything? And you were kind enough to send over, to dig up a sort of voice memo of this moment where basically the song was being written.
Yes, the tune that I recorded on my phone. And I put the phone on the table and it was 10-minute long thing.
That's it. That's it. So, and I said this last week with Inny Kay as well. These are the sort of things that I really cherish and want this show to be a platform for. There's all this audio material that artists sort of secretly hoard and maybe listen to once, but it sits somewhere and it's actually very special and very enlightening to the creative process. So you described this as the moment where, you know, the song kind of came, you were sitting there playing it and sort of wordless vocals, but then
phonetically,
some of the phrases sort of start to emerge.
Yes. There's a clarity. It was like a slow pulling focus onto actual words.
So do you mind, like, I know the clip is 10 minutes long, but I feel like we should just play the whole thing because it really shows.
Sure.
It really shows the creative process, raw and true to.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Definitely. I don't mind listening to the full thing. The first 4 minutes is, you know, it's just the kind of garbled speaking in tongues. But, you know, around 4 minutes, the lyrics just come from nowhere.
That's it.
And it's just, it's my heart going, this is what you want to say, you know.
Right.
It's like,
yeah,
hang on, just sing what I want to say.
Let me see if I got it here. Right, so I'm gonna play this. This is about 10 minutes long. Are we okay with the sound and everything? Do you want to quickly check some? Oh, you have a couple glasses of wine. What a gentleman. Thank you so much. Now, Liam, just mute my one here for a moment because I'm just going to duck into the back for a second while this is playing.
It's a little keyboard that I can hold like a flute. And my eggs are boiling. I just like the repetitive kind of loop of that. It's just three chords. So I'm like, oh, it's like Coldplay, you know? Like, who can't write a Coldplay song? Good. Felt okay. I should just keep singing this. There's no lyrics, but I need to keep playing this because it felt like I'm expressing something that's quite deep and there's no focus yet. Straining. Just very natural. What's the It's a moment in time. You hear that?
A moment in time.
It's a moment in time.
That's the, yeah. That's a lyric that didn't make it into the final version.
I love the most. It's me convincing myself that what's coming out is a moment in time I love the most. I fucking love this. I'm like, it's a moment in time I love the most. I love this the most. This is, yeah, so I just keep going. But my mind is thinking, okay, now I think I need to like find, what do I want to say? Like, what is it I want to fucking express? What is it that will help me if I express it? If I say it?
That's it. Mother's every day.
Feeling which consonants or which vowels are suiting my own voice, you know? My heart going, this is what you fucking say, these are the words.
That's like more or less the first line of the song. It just comes out then all of a sudden.
It just comes out. So I had a stepfather who didn't encourage it. Suddenly my brain is explaining to me what I want to sing about, you know. Shine. Pull focus.
Filmmaker's terms here.
My stepfather did not enjoy it. And money came into it, because he was always like, are you making any money? Are you making money? I got teary because I brought my mother into it. My brain brought my mother into it, you know? There was so much emotion. It's me going at the time, this is a lot of emotion, you know? We've kind of been blasted away by the idea of the concept now. Prospects.
Thanks for the transcription.
At this point, I'm almost like in tears, you know.
Wow.
He never took the time to cry to a song.
important line sort of.
It just magnified.
Theme of the song.
Yeah, it took it away from. I don't know, Stefan was an asshole. It took away from that to like. It was his problem that he was an asshole. It wasn't my problem. I resolved just there that it wasn't going to be a song about my stepfather. I pushed it to the max about him, and I decided, right, there's only a little bit of information about him that I need in these lyrics.
Yes, right.
But I pushed it there to the max. I'm like beating myself up about it. I'm like, okay, it doesn't need to be that much. But I went back to the mother element.
That was the important part.
And that became the most important part. You know, and the word shine that 5 minutes ago you heard, I said once, reappears, not in this recording, but reappears like 5 minutes later upstairs when I'm writing the song. And then that became the lyric of the chorus, you know. The shine just planted itself there.
Face of the Day kind of chords.
Interesting. But
that's audio gold to me, this sort of thing.
It was nice to hear my brain, because you know, it's literally, it's like moving out of a very vague, almost state of dementia, so blah 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 blah, into clarifying.
Yeah.
What is it you want to feel? What is it you're feeling? What are the words for that? Do they rhyme? Make them rhyme.
Right. Wow. Wow. Well, I have to say personally, as a stepfather myself, I'm a stepfather. So I hear this song and I think...
I loved you as a stepfather.
Okay. Oh, because damn. I hear this song and I think... I don't want to be that guy in the song. right, yeah. But that's not what this is about. I wanted to... There's a couple more things I wanted to ask you about. So right. That's the moment when you were writing the song Shine that then appears on this album released this year, 2022, Cocooning Heart. The first song... on this album is called Cocooning Heart. And I wanted to ask you if, because the lyrics to me sound like they're describing the greater context of how the album came about. You say at some point, you say, I'm tired of being the one to listen. Now I'll make some music and make it love me.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like you're...
Yeah, love me.
Yeah, like, but when you say I'm tired of being the one to listen, like you're tired of being the one behind the camera just listening, yeah. Now you want to be the one making the music.
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic just hit and I had several big projects that were, they were mighty projects.
Film projects. Right.
Big, big musical projects, and there was funding. I was going to New York to showcase a couple of This Ain't No Discos, actually.
Right.
In the Irish Arts Centre in New York, and we
the
had...
The same series where that made us initially meet.
That series, and that was going to be my career at the time the pandemic hit. We were due to be in New York only days after they closed the airports.
Right.
And we had lined up a lot of philanthropists and investors to be there, and Irish-American people with money who were dying to give us the money for us to produce another unlimited amount of This Ain't No Disco.
I see. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So if the pandemic hadn't hit, I would have been so committed to that life with all the pressure of these investors. And for the first time in my life, to have that kind of money and responsibility, I mean, I would have been committed forever. So when the pandemic hit and it was all over, there was about 2 weeks of like tragedy where everything I'd worked for 14 years or 12 years at the time was just falling apart. And like it just caved in because we couldn't, I guess the film projects all just caved in because we couldn't go out and meet and film and couldn't
do our
thing. And we're so guerrilla that we couldn't, there was no workarounds either. I know that there were series made for Netflix and everything where they just made it happen.
Yeah, right.
But like we didn't have, we
had to have some sort of content as we were stuck inside, right?
But we just didn't. Do you know, there was a part of me going, yeah, okay, let's just try and fucking make it work. But part of me just caved in and went, nah, feck it, boof, boom.
That's
and
it. Right.
I was over. That was it. It was like my career was over. It was like career ending moment for about 2 weeks until a friend of mine lent me this. I was so depressed.
Lent you this. Let's just say what it is for the audio listeners at home.
It's the Moog Subsequent 37.
Yes, synthesizer.
Which is like a cello of synthesizers. It's for the one finger synthesizer player. It doesn't do chords.
It's monophonic, one note at a time.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. It's really just like a cello player, you know. It's got a big filter knob, which is just like a bow. And I just had fun. I was really, a friend dropped it around to me going, maybe you need this, Miles. And as soon as I started playing it, I started singing up in my attic.
Yes.
And as soon as I started singing, just like that song Shine, the lyrics immediately for Cocooning Heart just fell out. Now I want, it's like I'm tired of being the one to listen. Now I want to make music love me.
Right.
Just fell out. And so that's why that's number one on the album.
Yep.
And it's whispered because I'm upstairs in my attic literally whispering it into a mic because if I'd be so embarrassed if my wife heard me or the
really
cats were, yeah no
wow
like I'd, wow. I'd like if she left to go to the shop I'd be like okay now's my time to record a vocal and I'd still be whispering it because I didn't want the cats to hear it and then I'd hear the front door in the middle of a verse that's going really well and I'd be like oh now I can't continue and she's like are you all right up there and I'm like yeah it's fine.
Just like, working on some ambient music.
When are you going to the shop again? Oh, tomorrow. Right. Okay, fuck. And so I continued. Yeah.
Really? They were so shy with it.
Oh, super vulnerable. Like the most vulnerable. I think because I just denounced it like so long ago.
That's what 14 years behind a camera had done to you.
Yes. Yeah. But at the same time, funnily enough, like at the same time, there was a 14 years away from music, watching it so much and listening to it so much, I was still evolving as a musician.
Right. But how could you not?
How could you not? Yeah.
If you come from being a musician, you have that musicality already, and then you're watching and absorbing all this music. How could you not sort of?
I was just learning the whole time.
Right.
It's like there's 10 albums in those 14 years that don't exist that you think should, because the link for me is there. You know, I just hopped from being pop folk artist into Cocooning Hearts song. I was like, did I just make that? Because I really like that.
Yeah.
Did I just sing that? Because I really like that. It was very hard to do up in my attic and I felt very vulnerable doing it. But I felt so proud listening back to it. You know, I was like, I can fucking do that.
Right.
No way.
Yeah.
And so the album is really a series of me going, I can do that. That's ridiculous.
Well, and it's a shock for me. Like I said in the beginning, to to see you as the guy who's not saying anything, hiding behind the camera, to then, you know, being out in front, singing in your full-bodied voice. Like, it's like, oh, he can do that. What was he doing behind the camera, filming all the musicians, you know?
I guess in a way, I just never wanted to leave music, you know?
Yeah.
I never wanted to leave it. And yeah. I had to do something within it that made money. And made my stepfather go, oh, are you making money? Right. I remember actually 5 years, he died 5 years into me being a filmmaker. Shortly before he died, he was like, he had dementia, so it was terrible, because every time I call around, he'd be like, are you making money? Like, every time. And I would go, yes, I am making money. How much money are you making? I'd be like, well, couple of grand. Somebody, a video, couple of grand, made it in 2 days. Like, I like really dig it in there.
Yeah, right.
But it was shit, because he had dementia, and he'd forget, and I'd have to do it the next day. I'd be like, couple of grand. and you know, that's where I'd worked myself into, which was kind of sad and, you know, a bit heartbreaking, but yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like one more piece of this puzzle that's worth bringing up is in this sort of evolution of coming back to playing music is something I started to see in the last couple of years is you were collaborating with a man, Ronan O'Snoddy.
Yes.
And that kind of brought you back on stage as a musician again.
Yeah.
Please say his name for me, because I'm terrible with pronunciation of Irish names.
Actually, you said it better than 90% of the Irish population. Wow. Okay. Ronan O'Snoddy.
Okay.
Snoddy. Whereas a lot of people go Snoddick. There's three brothers, Ronan, Colm and Rosso Snoddick from Keela.
Yes.
The band Keela, and everyone would be quite aware of them. And everyone says Snoddick. So you said it right.
Here Snoddick. In Ireland, Snoddick. Most people know who they are. Yeah.
You don't pronounce the G-H.
Okay.
Yeah. And Ronan was a friend of mine. I lived in Dingle for a time as a musician. And when I was like crumbling and playing to two people in Dingle, playing my own songs to like three or four people in a pub in Dingle, Ronan would be the one like going, like fucking looking at me like I was one of the greats.
Right, wow.
And then buying me a pint and like, I'm like, why are you
Was he already established as a musician himself at
big
that stage?
Big time established. And I was so intimidated by him because he was so, as I was initially meeting you, it's because he was so professional and doing it all the time. And so I was so honored, like I am being here today, so honored to be received by someone like that. And so Ronan was the first, he throughout my time as a filmmaker, he was like, what are you doing?
Really?
Yeah, okay. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And he'd call around to me with the instruments. He'd just give me an instrument and be like, oh, thanks for the mandolin. Great. And then like 2 years later, oh, thanks for the guitar. Thanks, Ronan.
Yeah.
You know, he would always remind me of the fact that I was a musician because he had such admiration for what I was doing.
Interesting.
When I thought I was doing nothing, it was all terrible. And so when I started doing this, Ronan, in the middle of all the pandemic stuff, Ronan called around, which was totally not allowed at the time.
Right.
And he was like, fuck it, I just thought I'd call around. How are you doing? And he said, give me a guitar. Boom. And I had a camera and I was like, do you mind if I film it? Boom, that's what I do. And so I filmed him singing a song called Tantalum.
Uh-huh.
That's a song he wrote during the pandemic. And it turns out he wrote like 10 of these songs, beautiful, romantic, gorgeous songs during the pandemic where he really got out of himself. Uh-huh. And got out of the way of thinking that Keela has kind of, you know, ingrained on him. He managed to get a distance away from them to really feel himself. So I was really honored to film that one song. But when he left, I played synthesizer all over it.
Oh, did you?
Because I'm in this mode, you know.
Right,
I'm making sounds, so I played synth all over it. And then once the pandemic, and that did really well. We put out the video and it went viral. What is going viral? Like 40, 70, 60,000 views within a week.
Yeah.
And a lot of people going, whoa, Miles, is that you playing synthesizer? What the fuck?
Right.
Like, that's what you look like. All right.
Right.
And it's just that was my first introduction to, oh, maybe I could play publicly.
Uh-huh.
And so I decided before I sing again publicly.
Yeah.
I actually put a lot of time into Ronan and making an album with him.
Yes.
And touring that album and producing essentially that album with him, which has done very well up to now.
Yeah, so. And you guys went on to gig all around the country. Mm. And we, at the very start of this year, it's easy to forget that at the start of this year, we were still like locked down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's mad, eh?
It was in January this year that we were at a festival together in Doolin in County Clare. And that was like, it was felt like a miracle that that festival happened.
I know.
You know, there was really not much going on then.
It was the first festival of like, of the post-pandemic.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, so for a lot of us, it was the first event in 2 years that they'd been to. And I saw your show then with Ronan.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, I was just so blown away by, because he's the singer. Mm. Like he's the one singing the songs and you're playing synthesizers, but you would sometimes stand up and start clapping and give everybody clapping and go, you just let out these shouts in the middle of the song and really elevate the energy of the room, which caught me by surprise because I knew you more as in a subdued, much more subdued kind of role.
Yeah.
So that was my first like inkling of your sort of more extroverted character that's in there, you know. And maybe extroverted is the wrong word, but largely expressive or something.
Yeah, it's the wanting to fill a room, you know.
Yeah,
the wanting to fill a room.
And to wanting to actually connect with all the people in that room.
He has been very encouraging. He spotted that I like doing that.
So
it's been very encouraging. And it helps the two of us to be together.
Yeah, and
ways.
I would encourage anyone who gets the chance to see you guys as a duo to go and see it because it's a really magical show. You both just give each other the chance to shine. I think, you know.
Yeah, indeed. There's a beautiful Nelson Mandela speech actually about shining. Do you know about it?
I don't know.
He's saying. It's kind of where I heard it first as a teenager, but Nelson Mandela, I can't recite any of the speech to you, but the number one thing about it was he was saying how when somebody shines, it allows the person who's watching them shine to also feel like they can shine.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's a... I don't know. I'm not a hippie. But it's like when somebody glows,
it's contagious.
It's contagious.
It is.
And it makes you glow.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're on form on a night out and suddenly you're just having a great time and you glance up and there's a lot of faces looking at you like this. You know? It's like they go away and they glow.
Right.
And they see faces.
It's
like
contagious.
And it's totally contagious. And it's a glorious thing to shine, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and everyone has got their own unique way to shine, you know?
Yeah.
And there's room enough for everyone to shine. It might feel sometimes like there's not because there's so many of us in this world, but everyone's unique and has their own way to shine.
Yeah. I think in the Nelson Mandela speech, it was like he said, nobody under any circumstances should stop themselves from saying what they want to say or feeling what they want to feel and grabbing the person they want to grab. Or,
Well,
actually,
what do you think?
You can't just grab anybody. Sorry. That's
maybe.
That's awful. You can edit that bit out.
Don't edit that bit out. Is there anything else you want to say before we try to perform a version of this song?
Nope.
That's it.
I'm good.
Would anyone like one of these oranges we have here? Anybody?
Yeah, I'll take one.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Would either of you like an orange?
Oh,
Yeah?
Okay.
Great.
Can you catch it?
Yeah.
Hey. Yes. Anybody else? No?
No. Okay. All right, Liam, you can mute me here. I'll unplug and we'll go back to our music setup.
I almost want them to all have instruments as well.
I know.
There you go.
Oh, I know. Like
yeah. Thank you guys for coming along. We're gonna play Shine. That's when this episode will finish. We've got a couple more songs prepared for you if you feel like sticking around for those as well. Just a couple. But yeah, Miles, take it away. Take it away on the dronies.
Shine.